Welcome Film Fanatics to Frame by Frame, where we journey through the moral complexities hidden within the silver screen. In our episode today, Mockingbird Morals, we're looking at an all-time classic, To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm Zara.
My name is Agnes.
And I'm Max.
Can I just begin by saying, To Kill a Mockingbird is an all-time classic with amazing characters and a strong message.
Yeah, it's not just a film. It's captivated audiences for generations with its timeless exploration of racial injustice, prejudice, and the enduring power of compassion.
To quickly summarize, we follow a curious girl, Scout Finch, navigating a racially challenged small town in the 1930s. Her widowed father, Atticus Finch, has agreed to defend Tom Robinson, a black man falsely accused of rape, despite the potential social ostracization.
It's no secret that our moral compass isn't always set due north. Studies suggest that a significant portion, possibly a large majority of our moral choices, are influenced by context, by the society and the environment that we live in. And this is exactly what happens in the film.
Right. The film opens with establishing shots of Macomb County, dry trees, and welcome neighborhood, as narrated by adult Scout Finch.
In the voiceover, Scout remarks, "Macomb County was a tired old town, even in 1932. There was nowhere to go and nothing to buy, no money to buy it with. Although Macomb County had recently been told it had nothing to fear but fear itself." This establishes that the story unfolds in 1932, in a small, stagnant town characterized by widespread poverty and fear, which affects the community's outlook. The voiceover alludes to President Roosevelt's inaugural address, and the quote calls out the fear that clouds the judgment of the community.
This is further emphasized when Walter Cunningham delivers hickory nuts as a payment to Atticus. Scout, unable to recognize why he may be ashamed, invites him to speak to Atticus after he leaves. Scout asks if they're poor. Atticus tells Scout that they are poor, but not as poor as the Cunningham.
Yes. This illustrates the harsh realities of the 1930s. The Great Depression led to widespread poverty, the Dust Bowl destroyed farmland, and deep racial divisions were evident by the 4,745 lynchings and the existence of sundown towns during that time.
These conditions had prejudiced the community into believing that people of color were untrustworthy. Economic hardship and isolation can lead to distrust, which can justify unethical decisions like issuing racist verdicts and committing violence against minorities. This theme of social injustice and distrust is reinforced by the symbolic use of the Radley House, shrouded in darkness and representing the town's unfounded fears. Jem's description of Boo Radley as a 6.5-foot-tall man who dined on raw squirrels and had bloody hands is clearly an exaggerated rumor, evidencing the community's prejudice.
The community's strict warning against approaching the Radley House emphasizes the deep-seated prejudice against the Radleys. In a particular scene, the children's curiosity drives them to investigate. The suspense is heightened by the sinister music and the diegetic creaking and rattling. A large shadowy figure adds to the fear, culminating in a loud gunshot that reinforces the image of Boo as a dangerous threat. This scene highlights how prejudice is fueled by the unknown and that the children view Boo with a circus show freak curiosity rather than their neighbor.
The blatant social injustice towards black people is also evident through the ramshackle condition of the Robinson's house, comparing with the relatively well-kept Finch community. We also see that black characters such as Calpurnia's subservient role as a nanny, Tom Robinson's labor as a field hand, and the character's use of racial slurs shows a social hierarchy within the community.
Let's analyze the characters in depth now. Boo Radley, one of the mockingbirds in the film, is initially shunned by the community. However, as the story unfolds, subtle acts of kindness, such as leaving the dolls seen in the opening credits for Scout and Jem, this is further seen when he rescues the children from danger, showcasing his moral integrity and willingness to protect the innocent despite his own fears. After the attack, Boo is hidden in the shadow of Jem's room until it is revealed that he saved the kids. After that moment, he is in the light. This change of lighting has Boo Radley going from the source of fear in the film to a symbol of heroism.
Yeah, exactly. This shift of our perception of Boo Radley helps to justify Atticus's choices to protect the privacy of Boo Radley and not turning him in for killing Bob Ewell. However, his initial sinister and alien-like portrayal makes us question whether his choice to murder Bob Ewell was justified. These two mockingbirds, despite their similar experiences, to diverge. Tom denied justice due to racism, ends up dead. Boo, hidden from society, becomes an unexpected hero by protecting the Finch children.
All this mockingbird stuff holds the key to the film's core message. Mockingbirds symbolize harmless creatures who bring joy, representing the innocence and vulnerability. When Atticus declares it's a sin to kill a mockingbird surrounded by the warmth of morning light, we can see that he is honestly teaching Scout and Jem that harming the innocent is a profound moral wrong. Now let's look at Atticus Finch. Do you guys remember the scene where the kids are in the bushes looking at Atticus in an establishing shot where he is reading in the dark night under a lamp?
Yeah, I remember that. I think the shot metaphorically implies that he's a benevolent figure protecting the light of truth in a dark, evil environment. The book and him reading reinforces the idea of him being logical and well-educated. The low camera angle immerses us in the children's perspective, fostering our admiration for Atticus's moral strength and bravery.
This contrasts the mob, which is shown from a high angle, making them seem inferior. Atticus also remains unfailingly calm and assertive despite standing alone with his children to fight against the mob. This shows us how Atticus is isolated in his fight for justice.
Ah yes, the infamous courtroom scenes. Our second Mockingbird, Tom Robinson's innocence and vulnerability is portrayed through close-up shots during his testimony. His steady tone, direct eye contact, and calm body language contrast with Myella Ewell's nervous demeanor. When Tom tears up, it evokes sympathy and reinforces his image as victim of prejudice. Tom's kind nature is further highlighted by his testimony about feeling sorry for Myella. This stands in stark contrast to the Ewell's testimony that are littered with inconsistencies. While Myella's accusations are demonstrably false, see a glimpse of a lonely woman who's upset.
When delivering his closing argument, Atticus stands in neutral middle shots. This allows the audience to view the case as if they were the jury, allowing us to feel more compelled by the argument and highlights how logical and correct it is. Through the initial long shot, we can also see the clear segregation with the black community being at the top, which are separated from the white townspeople at the bottom, reminding us of the racial segregation that is at play.
Throughout Atticus's closing argument, he is awash in light. This symbolizes his honesty and commitment to justice.
Atticus's closing argument starts with him emphasizing that the state did not produce one iota of medical evidence. Atticus then highlights that Myella did something in her society that is unspeakable. She kissed a black man, emphasizing that due to social conventions, she decided to put a man's life at stake to protect her dignity. He then calls out the evil assumption that all black men are liars and threats. This assumption, he argues, is a lie that a jury should not succumb to. Here, Atticus makes a clear ethical choice to challenge the deeply ingrained racist beliefs of his time. Finally, he reminds the jury that everyone is created as equal. In this speech, he is directly addressing the motivations behind the prejudice in the community and argues against them.
Despite Atticus's robust defense, the jury's predictable guilty verdict illustrates the deep-rooted discriminatory values in society, showing that even a direct challenge is insufficient to protect such outcomes. Jem, watching from above, is disheartened. The children are seeing the chasm between Law's ideas and their father's representation of the ugly reality and how it's twisted. The entire black community standing up to pay their respects also shows that they were expecting this. They know the issue, but respect Atticus for trying to improve the situation.
Mm-hmm, I totally agree with that. And to add on, his passionate defense for Tom Robinson evidences that Atticus has a relatively positive outlook towards the law. As evidenced by his quote, "I am no idealist. To believe firmly in the integrity of our courts or our jury system, that is not ideal to me. That is a living, working reality." He recognizes the imperfections in his closing statement when he says that everyone is created as equal and should be treated as such. Atticus says to Scout that there's been high talk around town that I shouldn't be doing much to defend him. This conversation plays a crucial role in Scout's moral development as she learns about the complexities of ethical choices and the personal cost of doing the right thing.
Whether it's navigating the mob issue, teaching his children about empathy on the swing, or arguing valiantly in the courtroom, Atticus's dedication to empathy, justice, and the law is evident. These characteristics are what make him take Tom's case in the first place, which at the time was considered morally wrong.
I really like the way the film evaluates the ethics of the era, but there could be some improvements.
Totally. There's limited perspective of black characters, like when Bob Ewell spits in Atticus' face, the Robinson family members are treated as props, kept entirely in long shots with the close-up reserved for the white characters.
Atticus is also an example of the white savior trope. I noticed that when Tom is convicted, we are instead to focus on Atticus, the sole hero who rescues people of color, downplaying their own agency.
Yeah, and there's some violence and use of racial slurs. Though it enhances the themes, it is sensitive for many viewers, since many students are watching the movie.
Despite its imperfections, the enduring influence of this film on ethical and social justice discourse solidifies its status as a classic.
Thank you for listening in today, and join us for our next episode about Little Women.
Explore historical topics in the episode by clicking on the links in the description, and share your thoughts on the episode and movies you'd like to see reviewed in the comments.